Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
The Volume.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. UConn is currently the favorite to win the title at plus 500. My favorite team, hometown Tucson, Arizona Wildcats, are currently plus 1,300. Plenty of good bets to check out. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code HOOPS. That's H-O-O-P-S. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, welcome to Hoops Tonight here at The Volume. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope all of you guys are having an incredible week. Got a fun show for you today. We got another NBA Finals rematch last night between the Denver Nuggets and the Miami Heat. We're going to break that game down from the perspective of both teams. After that, a super entertaining overtime game between the Chicago Bulls and the Indiana Pacers. DeMar DeRozan goes crazy. Bulls get a big win. We're going to break that game down from the perspective of both teams. Then I got four or five mailbag questions for the end of the show. You guys know the drill. Before we get started, subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel. It'd mean a lot to me if you guys would take a second to scroll down and hit that subscribe button. Don't forget about our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts under Hoops Tonight. It's also super helpful if you leave a rating and a review on that front. Follow me on Twitter at @_JasonLT so you guys don't miss show announcements as well as the film threads that I do from time to time. And last but not least, keep dropping mailbag questions so that we keep hitting them throughout the rest of the regular season. All right, let's talk some basketball. So just like every other Denver-Miami matchup, Aaron Gordon dominated the game early by just bullying some of the Heat players. And, you know, Miami, for whatever reason, is kind of content to let Aaron operate in single coverage a lot to start these games to see if they can handle it. And each time they kind of get bullied. There was a double team of Jokic in the post where Aaron Gordon just had a quick duck in on Jimmy Butler. That's how he got the scoring started. And then he just blew right through Duncan Robinson in kind of like a semi-transition possession and had like a nasty dunk. You know, slapped the backboard and flexed after. And then he came up the right wing and just took Nikola Jovic to task, just in straight ISO, just dropped his shoulder, beat him to the spot, and drew a foul. Got to the free throw line, hit a pull-up jumper in that stretch as well. Aaron Gordon is moving really confidently offensively right now, at least in his aggression. And then KCP early on was playing the passing lanes. He had two pick sixes and the Nuggets were defending well. Jimmy Butler was missing his jumper. Denver takes an early lead. And then Miami, you know how it is with them. They never kind of relent in terms of their effort and focus and energy. And so they just kind of work their way back into the game, especially in that stretch when Jokic was off the floor. Eric Spoelstra knows how Denver likes to play when Jokic is off. It's a lot of Jamal Murray. It's a lot of him just dribbling around looking for his own shot. He's usually going to target whoever he thinks is the worst individual defender and go after him. In this case, it's Patty Mills in these Miami lineups. And they were just, they had Caleb Martin on Jamal. Caleb was doing a really nice job. They were hedging and recovering with Patty, rotating out of it well. And then whenever Jamal did go to work in ISO, they were just sending late double teams. And so they, like in a lot of these possessions, specifically in that first half stretch, the ball was ending up in Justin Holiday's hands. And he was missing his jump shot at that phase in the game. Now, Jamal made a couple of shots. You know, like it's he has these like zero pass possessions. They kind of remind me of Kyrie Irving back when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron, where it was like where it's like there's just these possessions where Kyrie would get the inbound pass on the baseline and dribble up the floor and just, you know, maybe call for a ball screen, maybe pick on a guy in a switch. But it's just like a few dozen dribbles. And then he's going into a pull-up two-point shot. There was a possession I clocked where he had Caleb Martin on him, and he called a screen to try to get Patty Mills into it. He hedged and recovered out of it. Then he called Thomas Bryant into the screen. He hedged and recovered out of it. He ended up taking 21 dribbles on the possession without a pass and hit a pullback two, a really nice little like kind of half-spin pullback dribble against Caleb Martin, knocked down a two-point shot, hit a step-back three on Jimmy Butler in ISO as well. So he hit a couple of shots, but Miami kind of worked their way back into the game. And then something to kind of put a pin in for the end of the game, after Jamal Murray goes out, what the Nuggets typically do is they'll let Jamal Murray run that unit, and then they'll bring all the starters in and pull Jamal Murray out and put Reggie Jackson. And in that middle of the second, middle of the fourth quarter, they'll run Reggie Jackson with the starters. And Reggie in that second quarter stretch had a kick out pass to Michael Porter Jr. for a three. And then he hit a nice little elbow jumper in a ball screen. So just put a pin in that, because that's going to be a big element in this game when we get into the second half. So we go into the third quarter. Miami starts the third quarter on a run, just really intense defense, defensive ball pressure and in rotation, just classic, you know, Miami just being a pain in the ass, right? Terry Rozier's chasing Jamal around, doing a really nice job. Bam Adebayo, I've talked about this on the show before, but he's one of the best guys in the league at fronting the post against Nikola Jokic. He's just really quick and has great footwork to kind of whip around and get in front. And then he squats down low and he can kind of stay in front, but he also has the length to get over the top. And what ends up happening a lot to Denver when Miami does that, they'll find themselves in a late clock situation. Like they'll run an action, try to get the ball into Jokic in the post, and they can't because he's getting fronted. And next thing you know, there's 6 or 7 seconds left on the shot clock, and it's Michael Porter Jr. or it's KCP or it's Jamal Murray just kind of having to throw up a shot, right? And so they were doing a good job kind of sending them into the worst parts of their offense. Denver was missing some shots. Miami goes on a little bit of a run. Their largest lead was with 1 minute left in the third quarter. Duncan Robinson ran a dribble handoff with Thomas Bryant on the right wing. Jokic showed high. Jamal Murray chased over the top. Thomas Bryant slipped. The Nuggets were not set up in their backside defense in the low man position. And so Thomas Bryant got an easy little floater in the lane. And Miami leads 71-67. That was the lead with 1 minute left. Denver from there went on a 33-15 run to put the game away. They had the lead in command within a couple of minutes. 71-67 with about a minute left in the third. Started with a post-up double team of Jokic on the other end that got Aaron Gordon a right corner three. Remember, Aaron Gordon's not a good three-point shooter, but he is out of the right corner. He makes like half of them over there. Hit a big one, got it to one. Then Miami ran that exact same dribble handoff that they typically run. The one that I just talked about where Thomas Bryant got the slip for the layup, except for this time, Aaron Gordon was loaded up as the low man. The action got shut down. They had to run it reverse going back the other way. Jokic got a really good contest on Duncan Robinson this time. He missed it. They go down to the other end of the floor, and Jamal Murray hits like a driving layup on the baseline. So they go into the fourth quarter with the lead. They literally went from 71-67 with a minute left in the third. Now they're up 72-71. And then Christian Brown, quickly extends the lead, hits a transition three in the right corner. He had a closeout play where Caleb Martin was kind of digging down to the elbow, and he drove out of the left wing, or excuse me, the right wing, and like bumped Caleb with his shoulder and just hit a little floater over the top. Then, you know, one of the things that Denver is really good at is just identifying when they have a matchup advantage and just quickly wearing it out. In this early fourth quarter stretch, there was a play where he had Patty Mills on him. And so he just brought Aaron Gordon up in a ball screen because Thomas Bryant was guarding Aaron Gordon, and he just got right downhill. Thomas Bryant was really bad in his pick and roll defense, was like way out of any position to be able to help on the drive. And so Christian Brown just went all the way to the basket and made a little left-handed layup. And so pretty quickly it went from, again, in a matter of a couple of minutes, from Denver being down four to Denver being up four. Now Miami fought back. Duncan Robinson hit a three coming off of a screen. Jimmy Butler had a putback dunk off of a Bam missed layup. Bam Adebayo also had like a short roll possession where he hit Jaime Jaquez right under the basket. But then Reggie Jackson comes in, and this is that same stretch I was talking about from the middle of the second quarter where it's basically Reggie with the starters, and they just start spamming Jokic pick and roll, and he just hits pull-up jumper after pull-up jumper after pull-up jumper. Starts with like a really nasty left-to-right crossover to get Terry Rozier out of position. Terry Rozier just dies on the screen as a result of the nice move. Gets downhill, hits a jumper at the right elbow. Next possession, same exact thing, except for going to the left elbow, hits a pull-up jumper. Miami adjusts by putting Jimmy Butler on Reggie just to put some extra length on him. They run another one. This time, Jimmy Butler, though, they set the screen further out from the basket, and Jimmy just gets caught on the screen anyway, and he walks into a pull-up three and knocks it down just like that. It's a 10-point game, and the game is basically over at that point. And it was kind of an ugly game for Denver, but like to me, I've always been more impressed by ugly wins than by pretty wins when things aren't going well, right? Like, they threw the kitchen sink at Jokic like they always do. And so, you know, Jokic kind of had to play facilitator all night. Jamal Murray was only 5 for 14 from the field, but he hit key shots. He had 5 assists with 0 turnovers. He did what he needed to do in a poor shooting night. Michael Porter Jr. scored 25, hit 2 big shots late in the game, hit a pull-up jump shot to put them up by 7 in the early fourth. And then he hit the dagger on a skip pass in a play where they were pressuring out high to try to just basically get the ball out of Jamal Murray's hands. I think it might have been a Jokic double team right around the top of the key, but rifle skip pass to Michael Porter Jr. in the left corner, basically hit the dagger at that point that put him up 11. But they won with their defense. Aaron Gordon and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope were great as always. KCP, again, always playing passing lanes, getting out in transition and getting those easy baskets that kind of just invigorate the team, allow them to reset their defense. Big thing I wanted to call attention to, too, is this is something that really stood out to me in the Boston Celtics game too. Denver's just really good at closing out on shooters. And this is something that I think is highly underrated because like a lot of times we just look at like nearest defender. And this is one of the problems with analytics is they'll just take like tracking data and just how close a defender is basically equate that to a contest. Whereas there is a difference between like a like running up on a shooter and offering a token late hand up versus a real contest of a 3-point shot. And like, you can see Denver, like is actually trying to bother these shooters from the top down too. Like Jokic, when he's showing on these screens, like he's got length, he's getting his hands up there and he's getting good contests. Denver allows just 11.3 made 3-point shots per game. That is not a coincidence. That is a top down habit that they have of offering good contests on 3-point shooters. On the Miami front, same consistent themes that we've been talking about all season. Another bad Jimmy Butler game against Denver. He was 7 for 17 back in February. He was 6 for 16 last night. Just 1 for 6 on pull-up jump shots. And this has been a season-long issue. Last year, a Jimmy Butler pull-up jump shot was worth 0.94 points per possession. That's in the 55th percentile, so slightly above average for his volume. This year, 0.82 points per Jimmy Butler pull-up jump shot. That's in the 30th percentile, so like well below average at that point. Big difference. And again, a lot of times, especially against Denver, those are the shots that their coverages are giving up. That's why they can sometimes struggle against Phoenix, because they have guys that can hit those shots consistently. Bam, once again, missed 7 shots in and around the paint. That's been an issue all season. And then no reliable secondary scoring. Terry Rozier, just 14 points on 13 shots. He's had just 2 20-plus-point games in Miami in 18 tries. In 30 games with Charlotte, he had 21 20-plus-point games. Now, I know, obviously, that's a different situation in Charlotte, but even accounting for that, they need more out of him than what they've been getting. That's 4 straight losses for the Heat, and they're just 26th in offense over that span. You know, I feel the same way about Miami that I did last year. They have the personnel and the collective basketball IQ from the coaching staff down the roster to upset any of the 27 other teams in the league that are not Boston and Denver. They can beat any of those teams in a series. That means, yes, I think they could beat Milwaukee. Yes, they could. Obviously, those are the only teams in the East that you're really looking at, right? Like Milwaukee and Boston. But yes, I think they can beat Milwaukee. Yes, I think I'd be inclined to pick them against just about anybody else in the East. If they got out of the East and they went in the NBA Finals and there was a Clippers there, if there was a Suns there, like, I think they could win. But they could also just as easily lose to any of those teams because of their lack of firepower. And if they did run into Boston or Denver, they will lose just simply because they do not have the firepower. Even compared to last year's Boston team, this year's Boston team has just so much more firepower. And that's just an even bigger gap that exists there that nearly cost them in the series last year and very well might have if it wasn't for Jason Tatum spraining his ankle. So again, like, Miami is always somebody that's got to be taken seriously, but like more often than not, it's their personnel limitations that come to the surface. And at a certain point, like, I just kind of want to see what this looks like when they have some real significant talent advantages, like most of the good teams in the league do.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. Something I've always been a big believer in. When you try to take projects on yourself, you usually don't know what you're doing. You usually end up making mistakes, and it can be a big headache. And so not only can a professional from Angie get the job done more efficiently, but they also are people that you can support within your community as local businesses. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job is done well. With 29 years of experience, combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects easy. Consider Angie your hub for all your home improvement needs. They can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that will tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area, and the app is free and easy to use. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. All right, moving on to Bulls-Pacers. So the Bulls win in overtime. Now, before we even get into any sort of like, why are we talking about the Bulls thing, since November 30th, the Bulls are 27-20. That's the 11th best record in the NBA. They've been a really good team for most of the season. They have a ton of perimeter speed, a lot of guards who can defend multiple positions as well. DeMar DeRozan is hooping in his last 16 games. He's averaging 27-5-5 on 50% from the field, 35% from three, 90% from the line. Kobe White and Nikola Vucevic over that same span are both also averaging 20. Ayo Dosunmu has given them some really good 3-and-D play from the guard position. He's also got like a lot more off the dribble pop than you'd think as well. They're hooping. This is a real team, right? And obviously the Pacers are as well. I want to kind of focus on crunch time in this game. The going into the clutch period, whether we were inside of 5 minutes, inside of 5 points, the Pacers were up 104-103. Caruso had been hitting threes all night long. And so they end up getting a dunk for Nikola Vucevic on a play where Nesmith on the weak side did not want to tag Vucevic on the roll just because he had already made so many threes. Vucevic gets a dunk. The Bulls go up 105-104. Yeah, both teams had specific actions that they were targeting on both ends of the floor. So, like, for the Pacers, they knew that the pick and pop for Miles Turner was going to be wide open all night. Miles Turner hit a bunch of threes at the top of the key. Also hit some threes off of doubles, but hit a bunch of threes at the top of the key in the in that pick and pop situation. Also, there was a stretch at the end of the fourth quarter where the Bulls took Torrey Craig out. Torrey Craig had been guarding Pascal Siakam. They took him out and put Ayo Dosunmu on Siakam. And then they started just attacking with Siakam on Ayo Dosunmu in the post. And he was just drawing double teams and kicking out. Actually, Miles Turner hit a three to tie the game at 112 that came off of a double team of Pascal Siakam in the post. And then on the other end of the floor, it was kind of similar stuff. Like the DeMar DeRozan picking on Miles Turner in screens. Obviously, like the Kobe White, Nikola Vucevic pick and roll was a big one. We talked about the play where they didn't tag the roller. Vucevic gets a dunk. There's another one where they do tag the roller. It gets kicked out to Caruso on the left wing. Extra pass to the corner to Torrey Craig, and he ends up knocking down a three. So, like, they both teams were kind of just going to their pet actions again and again and again. And then it just turned into absolute chaos at the end of the game. We had so the Pacers go down to Siakam in the post against Dosunmu again. The Bulls double team, and it's a kick out pass to Andrew Nembhard at the top of the key. By the way, at this point, the Bulls were up 115, or the Pacers were up 115 to 114. So the Pacers, they go to Siakam in the post against Dosunmu. There's a double team. It gets kicked out to Andrew Nembhard. He misses the three. And on the play, DeMar DeRozan is engaged in a rebound with Aaron Nesmith, I think, and it ends up getting knocked out of bounds. They review it, stays with Indiana. They run a Halliburton Turner two man game, which was one of the actions they had been running so much at the end of the game. The on-ball guy falls over, so we end up with Vucevic switched onto Halliburton again. They double-team. That was a big thing that was happening, is like when they'd run those ball screens, Vucevic was essentially having to switch out on Halliburton, and then Halliburton would start mixing up, and then the Bulls would have no choice but to come with a late double-team. But one of the things that was happening with Indiana is their spacing wasn't super sharp, and Andrew Nembhard was spacing out pretty far away from the basket, like 25, 26 feet. And so these double-teams were turning into like long three-point shots for Andrew Nembhard. He missed another one. Miles Turner goes up and taps the ball out, but on the tap out, everyone kind of goes to the basketball and Kobe White gets it. All of a sudden, he's got a head of steam going the other way and only Andrew Nembhard's in his way. Andrew Nembhard sprints and gets back into the play, forces him to change his shot, but Siakam comes flying in from behind and comes in and blocks it, nearly goes out of bounds, and Nembhard saves it right to Aaron Nesmith. He gets fouled to go to the line to make both free throws. It's 117-114. Indiana intentionally fouls. DeMar DeRozan makes the first free throw, misses the second. Obi Toppin fails to secure the rebound, taps it out of bounds, and then DeMar DeRozan just hits a ridiculous right shoulder fade to send it to overtime. There's a cool quote from DeMar DeRozan after the game talking about how clutch situations kind of become like survival mode, and that's literally what it is, and it's something that I've always loved about the game of basketball is like, when you get into those situations where it's all on the line and everyone's playing super hard, it almost becomes about survival in the sense that it's very improvisational. It's a lot of like he even talked about it. He was like, in the timeout, they had called for him. They kind of had set up a screening action in the key for him to come up towards the top of the key. And they were basically top locking it and preparing to switch. So DeMar DeRozan did a really smart counter. He ran up like he was going to go off that screen, and then he kind of just gave a little push and then cut back towards the basketball along the baseline, got just enough separation. And then we're talking about arguably the best fadeaway jump shooter of this era, depending on who you ask. He's definitely like, this is a guy who's made his entire living in the NBA off of right shoulder and left shoulder fades in that mid-range area. Hits that right shoulder fade over the hits the right shoulder fade along the baseline, sends the game to OT. When we go into overtime, really became about DeMar DeRozan picking on Miles Turner and switches, setting ball screens, getting Turner on switches, and he was just hitting those classic crossover moves to just get a little bit of separation to elevate and knock down mid-range jump shots. Then as a result of that, the Pacers had to start doubling, which is something we'll come back to in a second. On the other end of the floor, Pacers hit a couple of pick and pop threes for Miles Turner. It was the one action that they just could not figure out. It's Halliburton's coming off. Vucevic is having to show and many times switch. And then the only way they could avoid that kickback pass to Turner was to switch, which would then end up in a double team anyway. So they were in a real predicament on that specific front, just guarding and dealing with Tyrese Haliburton and pick and roll. But the couple of Turner threes keep the Pacers in front. And then DeMar DeRozan just hits a nasty hesitation pull-up three over Pascal Siakam to put the Bulls up. Then the Pacers start face guarding DeRozan because he's got 45 points at this point. So they need someone else to get a bucket. Vucevic just takes Turner to task and ISO, hits a right shoulder fade. Then Ayo Dosunmu drove right by Tyrese Haliburton in an ISO, just dusted him off the dribble and got a layup. And then again, on the other end of the floor, whenever they went back to switching that pick and roll to stop Turner from getting those pick and pop threes. And when they did that, once again, it just kept ending up in Andrew Nembhard's hands too far away from the basket. So the Pacers need to do a little bit of work on how to deal with just late double teams on ISOs when Halliburton's picking on the big man. Just like maybe having Nembhard, instead of sitting out that far from the three-point line, having somebody flash cut to an opening that's closer to the ball so that maybe they can get something that's a little bit more going towards the rim. Siakam did hit a move on Craig on a baseline out of bounds to get it to two with 42 seconds left. One of the things that kind of sucked in this game is on that crazy Siakam block at the end of regulation, he landed on top of Coby White. Looked like he tweaked his knee. I couldn't find any information on what the injury update was with Coby White, so hopefully he's okay. But Torrey Craig came back into the game in overtime, and Siakam hit a bucket on him to put it back to two. DeMar DeRozan dribbling at the top, kind of out by half court. They throw a late double team at him. Caruso slips the ball screen. DeRozan hits Caruso. It's a textbook 4-on-3 situation. Ayo Dosunmu just kind of sneaks along the baseline and finds a little opening on the left side of the basket, gets a layup, and the game is over. A couple things. Hopefully Coby White is okay, like we talked about earlier. I wanted to focus, before we get move on from this game, I want to talk about just something that Rick Carlisle talked about after the game. The idea of like minor mistakes. And, you know, he mentioned after the game, we were one rebound away from winning. And he's right. If Obi Toppin, instead of tapping out that free throw rebound, if he just grabs it and gets fouled, the Pacers win this game. That was how well they played. And, you know, when we look at games like this in particular, games that are just super back and forth and both teams have multiple leads late, it's kind of harder to focus on big picture things because, like, you know, either team could have won this game. Again, like Pacers do a basic thing, like grabbing a free throw rebound. They just win. And then it's an entirely different vibe coming out of this game. And so what I like to focus on when we look at games like this is why attention to detail is so important on the little things. Because yes, you're right. In these kinds of games, there's a lot of like maybe DeMar DeRozan makes the crazy right shoulder fade. Maybe Miles Turner is making the pick and pop three. There's a lot of like make and miss type of stuff going on that's a little bit outside of your control. Obviously, it's inside of your control to work for the best possible shots. It's inside of your control defensively to make as many things as difficult as possible. But there are also some things in that element that are out of your control in terms of makes and misses. As far as the details go, though, that's where if you are sharp on the little things, you buy yourselves the margin for error for maybe for someone to make a big shot for the other team or maybe for you to miss a big shot for your team. For example, the free throw rebound. That's we don't need to get any further into it. Just sticking to your fundamentals, having someone box out the shooter, pinching on the best the best bigger, you know, kind of forward that they have on the block, bringing in a guy and crashing from behind the free throw shooter, whatever you got to do, you got to secure your rebound there, right? Also, a missed rotation on the double team. When they double team DeMar DeRozan out top, it was a two-point game. They get a stop there. They have a chance to go down. They all eyes are on the ball, though. No one's tracking the other off-ball defenders, and Dosunmu sneaks along the baseline, and like the one thing you can't give up in a 4-on-3 is a layup. You got to make someone make a jump shot in that situation. Even on the Bulls front, like that lineup decision, Torrey Craig, I actually thought was doing a solid job on Pascal Siakam. And at the very least, you could leave him in single coverage. He had actually stonewalled Siakam a couple of times there down the stretch in regulation. They take him out of the game and go in with Dosunmu, put him at the four. And one of the biggest possessions of the game was when it was 112-109. And Siakam, just because Dosunmu's at the four, has a huge mismatch in size on Dosunmu, just takes him down to the block and draws a double team, and the ball gets worked around to Miles Turner for three on the left wing. So even on the coaching side of things, like a little decision here, a little decision there goes a long way in these kinds of games. And that's why when you see me harp on teams like Denver and their execution, that's why. Because like a lot of playoff games look like that. A lot of playoff series look like that. They are determined by the slightest of margins. And so You know, the execution piece, the like attention to detail piece, those sorts of things tend to be difference makers. And when you get to the latest levels of the playoffs, and that's why I focus on those things so well. They're a really fun game. Like, just like classic NBA regular season gem there from the Pacers and the Bulls. Really enjoyed watching that game this morning. All right, let's move on to our mailbag, and then we're going to get out of here for the day.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider's look at the NBA and the culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will bring his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoops takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. Something I've always been a big believer in. When you try to take projects on yourself, you usually don't know what you're doing. You usually end up making mistakes, and it can be a big headache. And so not only can a professional from Angie get the job done more efficiently, but they also are people that you can support within your community as local businesses. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job is done well. With 29 years of experience, combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects easy. Consider Angie your hub for all your home improvement needs. They can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that will tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area, and the app is free and easy to use. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com, or download the app today. Hey, Jason, love your show. Have you noticed that almost all of the best teams in both conferences have most or all of their core players in their prime, 25 to 32? Denver, Boston, Cleveland, Minnesota, Phoenix, Dallas, New York, etc. OKC and the Clippers are the exceptions, but Shea is clearly in his prime as well as the Clippers' role players. Looking at Golden State and the Lakers, it's no coincidence that they've struggled so much since the Dubs only have Wiggins in his prime, and the Lakers just D'Lo and Reeves. AD is clearly on the decline since 2020. It seems that constructing a roster with all the core players on the same timeline is the biggest factor to winning, which means Oklahoma City, Orlando, and Indiana could dominate in the late 2020s. Curious about your thoughts on this. So a couple things. First of all, and this is a big thing that kind of stood out to me just watching Pacers Bulls. As the way the game has changed, the sheer amount of perimeter talent and speed has made it so that older teams, I think, struggle just to keep up defensively now in a way that they didn't used to. Like, you really got to get up for these games defensively against some of these quicker teams on the perimeter. So many teams around the league now are running five out offense. I won't get into it right now because we did a little bit. We did like 2 summers ago. I think we did a breakdown on five out offense. But like the gist of it is, the in a five-out offense, you're leaving the paint unoccupied and you're getting into the paint on rolls and drives. What that means is like your big man, whoever your vertical spacer is, he's operating out on the perimeter, running dribble handoffs and ball screens, and then rolling into the paint rather than waiting in the paint and then coming up to set a ball screen, or waiting in the paint, you know, to sit in the dunker spot. And then there's tons of different actions and entries. Like, you can get into five out from pistol. You can get into five out from horns. You can do that kind of thing. But the gist of it is all five players are on the perimeter and the paint is left open so that guys can roll into it and guys can drive into it. And then from there, it's everyone's involved. They're interchangeable spots. You know, all of your perimeter players are able to run a dribble handoff or to run a ball screen. Whereas like a four out offense, is much more like, think about like what Dallas runs. It's much more of like a brute force, like our primary ball handler and our secondary ball handler. The two guys in the corner, they do nothing but shoot. And we're going to come and set a ball screen, and we're from the guy starting under the basket to come set the screen. It's just brute force basketball. And usually there's only four perimeter spots occupied. It's not equal opportunity. The guys in the corners are just in the corners. The guys up top are the guys running the action. And so that's kind of the difference. And as most of the league has gone into five out style of play, or at least it's trending in that direction, you had five out basketball with a ton of quick guards and a ton of speed and skill. All of a sudden, the dudes that are in their 30s, that their legs don't get as warm as they used to on a nightly basis, they struggle to guard. Now, that is something to keep in mind as well, though, when we get to the postseason, because when we get into the postseason, the effort gap shrinks, and then those veteran teams do have advantages in experience and skill. So I don't think it's smart to write off all those veteran teams, but I do think it's something to keep in mind when we're talking about regular season basketball. Older, slower teams are going to really start to struggle in the NBA regular season. I truly believe that. Next question. Hi, Jason. I'm curious to know how you assess off-ball 3-and-D cutting players. For example, archetypes like ball-dominant shot creators or rim runners, shot blockers, is easier to see how they affect the game, and there's always the usual metrics that are used to measure their efficiency and usage. For the off-ball archetype, those usual metrics and eye tests don't always work. Just because you come off of these curl screens and backdoors doesn't mean you always receive the pass, or the passes and screens aren't great. Plus, your team context matters. If your team is a heavy ISO or post-up centric team, your effectiveness likely won't be as good or as a similarly graded off-ball player whose team is, say, drive and kick centric. Every championship team has prioritized off-ball threats, so quality players that fit this mold are super valuable. I just feel that often the archetype is undervalued in the draft, and perhaps a reason why it's not clear how to measure this style compared to other archetypes. Thanks again for all the content. So I think, like, when it comes to the way I look at it, we talked about five out offense a second ago. So let's take two offenses, for example. Let's say Golden State, five out offense, and let's take Dallas, more of a brute force, four out, one in offense, right? In the role players you need in both systems are very different, okay? So five out basketball is primarily read and react. What that means is there's a ton of like improvisational basketball going on. I'm going to backdoor cut here when he's overplaying me, right? Like, this is a two-man action coming off of the screen. If I see this, I slip. If I don't see this, I go over the top. Like, if I see this, maybe I turn and pin down for the other guy to run off, and then I slip, or whatever it is. Like, there's a lot of read and react basketball taking place. Same thing goes for big guy on the ball, right? Like, if he sees his defender sagging back and he has an opportunity to set a good screen, you want to throw the dribble pitch. If you see your defender showing high and the guy's chasing, you want to fake the dribble handoff and then turn and go to the basket. That's a read that Draymond Green's really good at, for instance, right? So everything in the five out is read and react. In the four out, one in, it's way less about read and react and way more about play finishing. What that means is, like, the only guy really making reads is the Luka or the Kyrie in that situation, right? He's got the ball. He's dribbling up at the left wing. He's calling Derek Lively to come up and set the screen. All of the other guys have the exact same job. Left corner, if it's Josh Green, he's spotting up. Right corner, if it's PJ Washington, he's spotting up. Kyrie Irving, second side creator, he's in the right wing, he's spotting up. Derek Lively is going to come set a ball screen. As soon as he sets the screen, he's rolling hard to the basket, okay? If the action gets shut down, maybe Luka will swing to Kyrie. Luka will run back out to the left wing. Two guys will stay in the corner. Derek Lively will run up and set the next screen. It's the exact same damn thing, right? Like, it's very brute force, right? So the only thing Derek Lively has to do is screen and roll hard and have the vertical spacing element. The only thing Josh Green needs to do is hit a corner three or attack a closeout. The only thing PJ Washington needs to do is hit a three or attack a closeout. Kyrie Irving, hit a three, attack a closeout, or if the ball gets swung to you, run the next ball screen. So it's super simplified. So what matters so much more in that four out, one in system is those guys that are spacing, can they knock down threes and attack closeouts? Much more simplified. For the screen and roll guy, does he have the ability to set good screens and roll hard to the rim and provide vertical spacing with good hands and verticality, right? Like, does he have those abilities? So, like, when I'm evaluating a role player for that system, I'm really going to be looking at things like, you know, spot up points per possession, just like a simple thing that just evaluates how good this guy is at converting spot up opportunities. A guy who's a great spot up player is not necessarily a great read and react player. Those are two potentially different things. I'm going to be leaning on metrics a lot more there. For Read and React, it's so much more about the eye test, in my opinion. It's so much more about watching a player play in his system, seeing whether or not he's good at interpreting what's happening on the floor quickly. And then if you're looking at him in free agency and you're a five-out offense, maybe that's the kind of guy that you want to target. But again, Read and React, everybody's got to be able to do so many different things versus brute force. I've got play starters and play finishers, and that's pretty much it. Hopefully that's an explanation that kind of hits at what you were getting at in that question. Have you noticed a change in NBA player shot making in the last 2 years? Seems like there's been a breakthrough in sports psychology, and these players can enter and stay in a flow state, allowing the offense and shooting efficiency to explode. Hope you can ask an NBA player if you ever get the chance. I will if we ever get an NBA player on the show. As far as shot making goes, I talked about this a little bit yesterday. You know, every single bit of shot making is actually just fundamental basketball attached in chains. What that means is, like, let's say, for instance, I hit a James Harden style, you know, like in and out, crossover, aggressive step forward, step back to my left, pull up jump shot, right? Like, that's an advanced piece of shot making put together by James Harden, right? But if you really break it down, it's a hard in and out dribble. That's a fundamental thing. It's a crossover dribble. That's a fundamental thing. It's an advanced dribble with a hard right foot step to step back. I'm looking at it from James Harden. He's a lefty. I'm looking at it from me as a righty. But that hard right step forward and that step back, and then there's a footwork element to getting my base set so that I can go straight up and down on the move. And if I make the move properly, I will go straight up and down. And if I took a video of just the end of that shot, it's going to look just like a catch and shoot jumper. At least that's the way it is for me. So, like, that is a bunch of fundamentals attached together. There are certain things in basketball that have existed forever. And what's happening is NBA players are finding new ways to kind of daisy chain those things together and make new ways to score the basketball. It's like, even like just the idea of like hitting 3-point shots in ball screens, which is a thing that used to just basically not be a thing in the NBA 15 years ago. And now it's a must for any sort of primary ball handler to be able to punish teams that die on screens or go under screens, right? Really, it's the same exact thing. Your high hesitation, which is a fundamental thing, and then, oh, the defender got caught, or, oh, I have maybe a little bit of space. If the defender got caught, I could just elevate from there. If I need to advance to get a little further up so that he can't back pressure, it's a one dribble pull-up. It's just a one dribble pull-up. These are all fundamental things that people have attached together. But over time, everyone's got the existing manual from the last group of players. So, like, you know, the new generation learned from LeBron's generation. LeBron's generation learned from Kobe's generation. Kobe's generation learned from MJ's generation. MJ's generation learned from Bird and Magic, and so on and so forth. And so they're all just building on each other, and it's stacking. And that's how basketball players are getting better. Two more, and then we're out of here. Hey, Jason, can you explain how D'Lo's dribbling is legal? To me, as a relatively unexperienced fan, it seems like every few dribbles he holds the ball. Remember, he's not supposed to do that. And then he lets it go and it drops back to the floor. I hope you can picture what I mean. In my head, I see it clearly. Thanks for these mailbag sessions. I know you can't get to everything, but I wish you could, since I have a ton more questions. Keep asking them. Like, again, I'm not going to get to every single question, but we're going to keep doing them throughout the season. And so I will try to eventually get to as many as I can over time. Every NBA player carries. Like, if you really slow down the ball handling for literally any, like, some guys are worse than others. Like, KD's another guy who, like, really kind of holds it under his hand when he does his high hesitation. But the thing is like, it's legal by interpretation, meaning, like, the refs just allow it around the league. And so, like, again, like, I don't get upset about anybody around the league doing it, because it's literally something that every single team has two or three guys that do, if that makes sense. Last question. After their 22 championship, you praised the Warriors for roster, or you praised the Warriors roster building and patience, and you said that you appreciated that good process from owners, front office, and coaching staff, and even players that led to success. Do you feel like the Warriors are still abiding by that process, or do you feel like they've been winging it since things have gone south after the punch, especially after Bob Myers, who you praised in that June 22 video, left? If you do trust that they're still abiding by that process, JK has been balling, Moody's been good, drafting Brandon Podziemski and Trayce Jackson-Davis, how much of a chance, compared to back in 2022, do you give them to reach their ultimate goal again this year or next year, or however long Steph, Dre, and Clay may still play? A couple of things. So first of all, you know, I was critical of the Warriors during the 22 run, just because I'm a big pusher chips into the middle of the table guy. I'm a big believer that, like, winning an NBA championship is super hard, and the last thing you want to do is lose in a series where you didn't have enough firepower, and you had trade assets available that you held on to. And here's the thing, like the winner gets to tell the story. There's a version of that where they lose to Boston and you're like, we didn't play Jonathan Kuminga. We didn't play James Wiseman. We didn't play Moses Moody. This was a waste. We didn't get anything out of this, right? Like there's a version of that where that's what happened. That's not what happened though. Steph Curry was amazing in game four. They won the series. And so now you get the trophy and you get all of the assets that come from it. From there, it's been tricky because they have not had enough firepower in the 2023 and 2024 season. Now, for the first year and a half of that stretch, I was a big advocate of making a trade because I thought Steph is still at the top of that, you know, kind of seven or eight players in the NBA. And you got to give that dude a chance to win a championship because he's one of the rare players who's capable of doing it. But what happened was, is in the middle of this season, Jonathan Kuminga took a leap. And once Jonathan Kuminga took a leap, a real leap, a leap that makes you believe legitimately he can be probably the second best player on a championship team one day at some point in his career. Once you see that, that changes the calculus. And now all of a sudden it's like whatever minuscule improvement we get through making some sort of trade, it actually makes more sense to kind of hang on to these guys and see how it develops. And so again, like there might've been a point before Jonathan Kuminga's, you know, seven straight 20 plus point games or whatever. There might've been a point during that phase where it made sense to move him to try to bring in more firepower. But, you know, at the end of the day, new information came into the equation. And now the Warriors are kind of in a situation where, like, here's the deal. Focusing on this season, do I think they have much of a chance? No. They don't have a legitimate secondary, like a reliable secondary option at this point in terms of a guy that you can count on for four playoff rounds to give you reliable scoring, which that was kind of Andrew Wiggins and Jordan Poole combined in the 2022 playoff run. Jordan Poole's not here anymore. And Klay Thompson is not the same player that he used to be. Andrew Wiggins is not the same player that he used to be. And so they just don't have the same amount of firepower that they had then. Even like little things like a guy like Otto Porter Jr., who was super valuable in that particular season, right? Like they just aren't as deep with like reliable playoff guys. That said, I still think it's a really encouraging time to be a Warriors fan because Jonathan Kuminga is so good, because Steph Curry still has years left, right? Because Trayce Jackson-Davis has been a revelation, because Moses Moody is a guy that can defend on the perimeter and has some off the dribble pop and can knock down spot up threes. Like they've got a lot of encouraging stuff. It's more of a big picture move at this point where you're kind of hoping that you can overlap some of these young guys getting into their prime with the tail end of Steph's prime and maybe find a year in there where you can sneak to the top. All right, guys, so that is all I have for today. As always, we sincerely appreciate you for supporting the show. We have two more shows this week. We're going tomorrow morning, breaking down Celtics Suns, and then on Saturday night, Lakers Warriors live on YouTube after the final buzzer. I will see you guys tomorrow morning.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere, like at your pregame barbecue. While you prep your meats, that grease trap you forgot to empty is prepping to smoke your porch, garage, and the car inside. And without the right home and auto insurance coverage, the cost to repair this could eat up your savings. So bundle home and auto with Allstate to save and get protected from mayhem like this. Bundled savings vary and are not available in every state. Coverage is subject to policy terms and conditions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.